The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He's Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley. As we move into a Tuesday, Gary, what in the world is going on?
Well, first off, let's start out. And we've done this a lot. And we've done it a lot recently. A perfect example of media bias. Not telling you the story by, as we call it, line by omission.
Mm-hmm.
Keeping things out. And this was CBS News. Watch out, CBS, because Ocasio-Cortez is coming after you. Remember, your 2020 election team is too white.
Mm-hmm.
But this was the headline on Facebook. Rand Paul to have surgery in Canada for injuries from neighbor assault. Hmm. The senator who was condemned socialized health care will be treated in a country with socialized health care. Now, that technically is true. The senator who was condemned socialized health care will be treated in a country with socialized health care.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they're leaving out some important things that will get that would give you context. And all you have to do is go if I don't know if they took that down, the headline down, because it was criticized like crazy. But there were tons of liberals saying, see, he loves a socialized healthcare system, because that was the impression that they got from the story.
Mm-hmm.
What did they leave out?
The fact that he's not going to get free healthcare. He's going to pay cash and at a clinic that's a private clinic.
That's a private clinic, not part of the socialized healthcare system. It's a very well-known hernia hospital, Shouldice, in Toronto. My dad went there.
Mm-hmm.
When I saw it, I burst out laughing as soon as I saw it. Because if you read the article's actually quite clear. The article does not make the point that the headline makes.
Right.
But is this because they know that people just read the headlines and move on? Because mm-hmm. You should have seen the left. See, he's a hypocrite. He's using their socialized medicine. Didn't say that in the headline.
Yeah, read the comments. When you read the comments, you'll know how many people read it and how many people didn't read it in
right.
terms of the article itself.
Because right in there it says the surgery is related to the 2017 attack. Paul is scheduled for surgery at Shouldice Hospital. An advisor to Paul said the hospital is world renowned for the procedure known as a non-mesh hernia repair and is a private entity that is not part of the Canadian system. This is a private world-renowned hospital separate from any system, and people come from around the world to pay cash for their services, Paul's spokesperson said. That's in the first two of the first three paragraphs
mm-hmm.
of the actual article. The headline, the senator who has condemned socialized medicine will be treated in a country with socialized health care. No, you're actually going to a hospital that, in essence, is the opposite of what is going on in Canada, that happens to be in Canada, that they haven't shut down yet.
Well, did they write that if he's treated in the U.S., he's also getting treatment in a country that has socialized health care? Because we do have Medicaid.
That's true.
So,
right.
You know, you're not going to write that headline, of course.
So it's important to show you the blatant media bias that exists out there, this mm-hmm. time from CBS. Not defensible.
No.
You can't defend it.
No.
And as we find out, this is a day where I went, wow. I mean, it's almost every day now that the stories that come out, the left can't defend them.
Mm-hmm.
We will continue that coming up here in a little bit when we tell you the latest judge to uphold the contraception mandate
mm-hmm.
after another judge upheld the contraception mandate. We will tell you how I will use David French from the National Review, who used the lawless judges We may also want to use a term that we have used here, because whenever these things come up, it is Trump that is called the F word, which is fascist. Now, we only use the word because the opposition has used the word consistently. It was not, would not be how we would phrase it. But since they use it to attack Trump, we use the word to show you how those opposed to Trump have a much closer mindset to fascism, and you can't debate it. It's impossible to do so because the judges are wrong. And this is simply, and we'll just go over very quickly now and get into it more in detail later on, but it's simply the fact that Congress did not put in a contraception mandate. Congress said that the Health and Human Services and Obamacare must provide preventative services, but they did not list what those services were. They left it up to the executive branch to decide. Obama's executive branch decided to include contraception and make everybody, including religious organizations, provide it. The executive branch did that, not Congress. Trump came in, just like in DACA, Trump came in and said, oh, so it was an executive order. It was a decision by the executive branch. Okay, we don't like that. We are reversing it. We have the ability to do so. Now, we know to our friends on the left who have no idea, because the polls show the vast majority of Americans does not understand the separation of power, because they don't even understand the three branches of government. That's the vast majority of Americans. So we do feel like at times that very few people understand what we're talking about. But when Congress says, okay, we want you, a general outline we want to give, the executive branch gets to decide it. But when a new executive branch comes in, they can change it. And the courts ruling on this and stating, and it'll go to the Supreme Court, by the way, and the Supreme Court, it'll be overturned, because the executive branch has the absolute authority. The Obama executive branch had the right to do what they did, even though to have the contraception mandate in, they didn't have the right for religious organizations, which they have been shut down. But the contraception mandate, they did have the right to put in, because Congress gave them the ability to do that. We never argued that. We argued the religious exemption for the contraception mandate. But the contraception mandate in itself was not unconstitutional. And so the Trump administration can come in and say it's all gone. The Obama administration put it in.
If you believe the any administration has the power to implement it, then you believe the any administration has the power to rescind it.
Right. That's how it works.
It's not any different than DACA.
To our friends on the left, you can't debate that. That's non-debatable. The consensus is in.
You don't have to like it.
You don't have to like it, no, but that's the way that it is.
And so they can change the law if they want to change the law and take that away from the executive branch, right, if they want.
But this is where the judges, as we have said before, the judges are not fulfilling their oath to defend the Constitution of the United States and the separation of powers. This is where the judges are closer to the fascist mentality that Trump is accused of than Trump has ever been. Because these judges have said, no, we get to have our say. No, you don't. Congress has dictated that the executive branch gets to make the decision. The Obama executive branch decided to do one thing. They got voted out. The Democrats got voted out. Trump now is a Republican. He got voted in. He said, we don't like it. It goes. That's the way that it works.
The next administration can do what they want on it.
Next administration can go back in and
unless
say
Congress changes it.
Contraception mandate is back in. Now, the religious religious mandate was wrong, and they'll be overturned for that. Mm-hmm. But the contraception mandate in itself, is not unconstitutional. And so as we said with the, you know, in the Obama administration, so we didn't even argue that point. We believe it's wrong. We weren't pleased with it. We didn't call it unconstitutional. This is where the judges, the liberal judges, are the fascist mentality that Trump is accused of. Those who oppose Trump are closer to the fascist mindset than Trump could ever be. You can't argue that to our friends on the left. It is impossible. The only way you can argue it is because you are completely ignorant as to the separation of powers and the three branches of government and who does what.
And we talk about the decisions that were made at the Supreme Court on other things, on Obamacare. As long as the law stands, it's constitutional for any administration to implement these types of policies or rescind them. End of story.
So there, and it's important to point out, because the F word has been used so much against this president, it's very important to point out that those who oppose him, whether it's Antifa, as we said, you know, Antifa is supposed to be anti-fascist. They're closer to fascist than Trump could ever dream of. Because what do they want to do? They want to shut down free speech that they disagree with.
Mm-hmm.
The opposition to Trump is much more fascist than Trump could ever be. And everybody on the left, if you're listening, you know that's right. If you understand the separation of powers, you know that's right. And you can't debate it. And when we've brought this up, for example, in the travel ban, how much opposition did we have? How much pushback from the left when we explained it?
None.
Zero. Which means if you're on the left, you understand that the judges that you support have the fascist mindset.
Well, remember on the Iran deal, do you believe that should be left up to Congress? Yes. Do you think Trump should turn it over to Congress? No.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yep.
The numbers dropped significantly when you brought his name into it.
Is there a fascist exemption because of, well, it's okay if we're fascist because it's Trump.
Right. Or if we have a cool guy in the office, then he can be a fascist because he does it, you know, and he's really cool about it.
As long as we can have a cool, as long as these judges, though, they're in robes. They look pretty cool.
They're cool.
So we can have cool fascists.
Right.
You can be a fascist if you oppose Trump.
Right. You can have fascists in California. You know, they're not going to actually send people to jail. Then it shouldn't be in the law. But they're not going to use it. Then take it out of the law. But they're not going to use it.
In the gender pronoun mm-hmm. thing, yeah, law. So we'll get to that coming up here. Plus, senators say talking is better than not talking about the shutdown, but they're getting nowhere. One Democrat introduces a bill to temporarily open the government. How one university says it has to reinvent itself, which means move away from liberal arts.
Mm-hmm.
The left is shocked. How can you do that? Well, nobody's coming here. For liberal
right.
arts.
Business has dropped dramatically.
Yes. It's interesting because two polls out there. One shows that America is blaming Trump and the Republicans more, much more, for the shutdown. But the other polling shows that support for a border wall has increased significantly over the last year. Mm-hmm. Another call for the president to release the declassified documents. De Blasio, the wrong people have the money.
The wrong people have the money. Okay.
Which, by the way, is the dumbest comment ever.
The wrong people. I'm sorry, did those people earn it?
Yeah. I mean, that's why it's
or the did they steal it? Now, if they stole it, the wrong people have the money.
But the wrong people, for example, Jeff Bezos.
Mm-hmm.
Does the wrong person have the money? Or did he...
It depends on how the divorce goes.
Okay, you got a solid point there.
I don't want to be the judge
outside
in that case.
Outside of the divorce proceedings...
Exactly, yeah. Leading up to the announcement of the divorce.
If he didn't start that company up and create, you know, the $1 trillion business...
Mm-hmm.
You look at the success of over the years of Microsoft, right? Do the wrong people have the money to create those huge businesses across the country?
Right.
Or do they have it when they have it for a certain length of time, or they earn it, or they grow a business, then when are they the wrong people? When is that? That's the other question. Two questions the left has, by the way, in 30 years of radio, nobody has ever addressed this question on the left, ever, which is, what is your fair share?
Define it.
What is your
$1 million dollars.
Define fair share.
There's no way to do that. I'll tell you who can do that. The parties involved, and only them. You agree to work for whatever it is, then that's what you believe is fair.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
Radio. He is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. So I wanted to get those two things out of the way, and now I'm ready to go home.
We can go now. Yeah, let's go. Come on. Get out of here.
Because there's nothing on the wall. I mean, there's nothing changing on the whole shutdown thing.
Well, you know, the president basically standing his ground, then saying, you know, I really don't have any plans to use, you know, a national emergency. And I don't have any plans to reopen the government. There was some talk about some senators, you know, some senators in the middle. They're rolling up their sleeves. It was like the whole Van Jones thing when they were going to count the electorate votes. But the whole thing is, and who was it? I think it was Senator Cornyn from Texas who said, yeah, I don't think Mitch McConnell's necessarily on board with what's going on with those senators. You know, they're trying to see if they can do something without Trump. There's nothing they can do without Trump. They don't have the numbers to do anything. So nothing is going to happen. The question is, how long is it going to go? Then you and I were asking, is Matt Drudge trolling the president again with his headline right now? And it shows a picture of the wait at airports, TSA wait, because, you know, TSA is being affected. So the question is, how long can that go on? This isn't peak travel season, but still, especially with business travelers and anybody who does travel.
Well, I told you, I mean, I'm traveling to Florida on Friday. It's a three-day weekend. I'm traveling, coming back Sunday night. I already told... Yeah, I'm going to be at the airport 3 hours earlier, and I'm in the premium line.
Yeah,
and I told my buddy it's his wife's birthday on Sunday, and my flight leaves 5 o'clock in the evening and comes, you know, direct flight back.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, you know, it's my wife's birthday, and we're thinking about going to dinner. I said, I'll take an Uber to the airport at 1 o'clock.
Yeah,
I'll sit at the airport. He said, that early? And I said, I'll take an Uber. You can drop me off early, whatever. I said, I don't want to take the chance.
Right.
So, I mean, you know, it's just got to make sure that I get back.
Sure.
I have to make sure that the shutdown, the partial shutdown, doesn't affect our show. But the Drudge headline, shutdown turns nightmare, government paralyzed. And then you see checkpoint, 60 plus minutes and a huge crowd. And you ask the question, is he taunting the president again?
Right. For Cobra Electronics, here's your forecast.
A very active weather week is taking shape in the west. A large closed low will usher in waves of Pacific moisture into California through the day today. Then for Wednesday into Thursday, it's another powerful system that'll plow into the west coast. Overall, heavy rain, mountain snow, gusty winds, rough surf, possible flooding, especially near the recent wildfire burn scars. We could see the likelihood of mudslides. That's all for the west. For the central part of the nation, things will remain primarily dry today, with the exception of the Chicagoland area. In and around northern Illinois, northern Indiana, we do have the chance for freezing rain today. Chicago will top out at near 35. For Boston, sunny, 35. New York City, 39 and clear. Atlanta, sunny and 50, with showers for Thursday. Dallas, 54, rain later tonight. Your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
is The Outrage. Eric Harley and Gary McNamara on Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Welcome and good morning. Thank you so much for being here. So, yeah, you and I both wondering. Here's a question about Drudge. I understand what he was doing last time. And we started talking, if you just tuned in right now, about Drudge Report and asking, is he taunting the president?
Right.
By having the headline, because he knows the president reads it. Shutdown turns nightmare. Government paralyzed. Checkpoints, 60-plus minutes. Shows an airport, I believe it's Hartsfield from Atlanta, that was long the other day.
Yeah.
Maybe, I believe he is, unless that's a stock photo, I don't know. But it says checkpoints, 60-plus minutes. Now, we know what he was doing when Sarah Huckabee Sanders came out and said, well, we don't need to get the money from Congress. We can get the, we're directing our agencies to come up with it. We're going to come up with it that way. And then the right media went crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And Drudge Report had, you know, President caves United States to give $5 billion to Mexico to shore up their border.
Which was two separate stories, but he stacked them.
Stacked them
because
together.
Because they were related, but they were really two separate stories.
And we said that, and Ann Coulter and others who just went after the president for it. But that headline alone, we said, we looked at each other and said, he's taunting the president.
Yeah.
And the object is to get the president to change his mind,
mm-hmm.
to get the president to reverse. You could look at that and say that's what Drudge was attempting to do.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know through this headline what he's getting him to do. If he's attempting to get him to do something, I don't know what that does by saying shutdown turns nightmare, government paralyzed.
Yeah. Yeah, first of all, I don't know that the government is paralyzed. I think that may be a little bit of hyperbole, but you can look at what's going on with TSA. You can look at, I don't know, what, 800,000 federal workers and all of that. The question is the government actually paralyzed? That may be a bit of hyperbole, but no doubt what puts the political pressure on the president is when it starts affecting everybody, not just the government workers. So you have the sick out or whatever's going on at the TSA. You have a shortage of workers or you... You know, and how long can you go on with that? You're going to, if the threat is you're going to go on for 2 years, how many people will leave the TSA for good? Say, I can't.
Well, that's why, the other thing is air traffic controllers. Mm-hmm. Airports will start shutting down.
Right.
There will be a point when they'll say, well, wait a minute, we've been out of, even an air traffic controller who's mm-hmm. much better paid than the average TSA employee.
Mm-hmm.
After 3 months, do they start quitting and looking for different jobs if you decided to go at that particular point? And when airports have to shut down or major delays in airports where flights start getting canceled by the hundreds or thousands, that's the point where the pressure starts coming. When will that happen? Now, the news items, you know, you and I were just looking at the different polls out there. The one poll showing that... here it is. The one shows that support for the border wall has soared over the last year among swing voters. The latest Washington Post poll reveals a major shift among nearly all demographic groups across the country when it comes to support for a border wall at the southern border. At this time last year, the poll claimed that only 34% of voters supported a wall at the U.S.-Mexico border. Today's support for the wall has climbed to 42%. Most notable swing voters are increasingly supportive of the border wall to control immigration. Last year, less than 30% of swing voters said they supported the wall. Today, the support has soared to 40%, an 11% increase in support from year to year. Likewise, 67 to 87% of Republican voters and conservatives support building a wall on the U.S.-Mexico border. Democrat voters have not increased their opposition to the wall over the last year by even 1%. So their opposition hasn't increased. Among Midwest voters, college-educated voters, men and white Americans, a border wall has jumped in popularity for the last year. For Midwest voters, the poll claimed only 35% supported the wall last year. Today, Midwest support for the wall is up nearly to 50%, a 14% increase. But when you look at then the polling when it comes to the shutdown and whether Americans believe that the government should stay shut down because of the border wall, that's where the polling numbers changed drastically.
Yeah.
And I think it's 63% of Americans want the government, I think, open. I just have the number in front of me here.
Well, and again, it's because it's hard to predict. It's hard to know where the base goes for the president. You reopen the government and you don't take executive action at all, and you just reopen the government and you move on. Then they know it's going to be at least 2 years before anything gets done on the wall in terms of funding. And do they stay with you and support you in 2020? You know, you had a number of people in December during that little 2 or 3 day period when they were upset with the president saying, I'll never vote for the guy if he caves on this. I'll never vote for him again. It becomes a little different when you have that binary choice. So I guess it would, A, for some of them, depend on who's running against the president, who the nominee is for the Democrats, and, you know, B, whether or not that choice is that binary choice, or whether they take the third choice, which is staying home.
Well, you know, when I've seen the thing with the polls that say the vast majority of people blame the president for the shutdown, well, that can be taken a couple of ways. Well, yeah, if it wasn't for Trump and I voted for him, the government wouldn't be closed down because nobody will have the guts to shut down the government in order to get the wall.
Right.
So is that a negative, or is that just an acknowledgement that if Trump didn't exist, there would be no push for the wall? There wouldn't be this emphasis. Forget about just the wall. There wouldn't be this emphasis and this push for border security, which is why we have said all along that if you see the numbers that have moved over the last year from the ABC poll, then you ask yourself this question. A lot of that movement probably came in the last 2 months. What if there would have been a consistent marketing of border security for the past 2 years? I mean, mass marketing, not to your base.
Right. No, just to the American public.
Well, as we've said, what you're trying to do is change independence. You've seen that you've already had success in doing so. But that's why we believe, and we have said, we believe the error in the administration and Republicans in general. And we just don't blame the president and his administration for this because Republicans have failed miserably for 15 years. I still believe that both, and I mean the Republicans in Congress and the administration, are still missing a huge factor in this, and that's not pointing out that the Democrats are for open borders. They still believe that it's just the wall versus non-wall argument. That's a part of it. But it's not really, it's not the big picture. The big picture is they want open borders. And we added another reason to it. By the way, I had one guy when you were gone on a Friday morning show that tried to argue that with me. No, they're not for open borders. I said, sorry, you can't say that. Not only are they for sanctuary cities, where, hey, you get across the border, we believe you should be able to stay, but Democrats now are promoting across the nation that illegal immigrants should be able to vote in local elections. Well, if you believe that, you believe in open borders.
I was reading one story, and I'm trying to pull it up right now, earlier, that talked about the president appealing to the rank-and-file Democrats and appealing to younger Democrats, the ones who did not support Pelosi being speaker. And I thought to myself, well, why? They can't make a deal. They're not going to put pressure on Nancy Pelosi and House leadership or the Senate leadership. Now, the rank and file, that's one thing. But young Democrats in the party that didn't support, well, who's that going to be? Ocasio-Cortez? Nope. So the question is, where do you get that support? It's going to have to be from rank and file. It's not going to be the Democrats. It's going to be the people in the middle. That's who you're trying to get to.
Right. Let me see here. I want to find it. This was the Fox News story. Quinnipiac University poll released Monday found that 63% of voters agree with the Democratic proposal to reopen parts of the government that do not involve border security, with 30% opposed. The same poll found 63% also oppose using the shutdown to force wall funding, with just 32% supporting. The poll found 56% of Americans blame Trump and the Republicans in Congress for the partial shutdown, compared with 36% who say the Democrats are responsible. Earlier Washington Post ABC poll also found more Americans blame Trump and the Republicans and the Democrats over the stalemate, though the same survey showed support for the wall growing to 42%, up from 34% a year ago. And we saw that increase from 30% to 41% of independents. And that's why we believe there should have been an education of the population going on from day one of the administration, instead of focusing on how Mexico is going to pay for it and coming up with all these harebrained, ridiculous justifications of how they would pay for it up until just the last couple of days, where he's talking about, well, somehow the trade deal will do it. Mr. President, that's a losing position. Stop it. But the fact is, now they seem to look, the wrong time to educate the public is when you shut it down. Should have been educating the public over the last 2 years. Should have been educating the public the first year or the first 6 months, and then demanding a vote or doing what you claim you could do. And this is, again, where we explained yesterday. The president showed his hand. The president has not negotiated this good. When Sarah Huckabee Sanders, when they backed off before Christmas and said, well, we don't need Congress to appropriate the money, we can do it on our own, and then all hell broke loose, the president showed he was willing to compromise completely on it.
Yeah.
The White House showed we are willing to surrender completely. Only when the president apparently came to the realization that he would lose his base did he change his mind.
Here it is from the Associated Press on one story on the wall and the shutdown a couple hours ago. The White House has been considering reaching out to rank-and-file Democrats rather than dealing with House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer to try and chip away at the Democratic opposition to the wall. A White House official said plans were in the works to call freshman representatives, especially those who initially did not support Pelosi's bid for the speakership. Well, but what would be the point? You're not going to. She is the speaker. She's going to be for the next 2 years. They're not going to have any leverage over here. Rank and file Democrats, that's one thing. It would be more of the people in the middle, as we've talked about. The Democrats, I don't know. But certainly the people in the middle, rank and file, that's one thing. Try and go to the freshmen in the House? Who would that be?
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. But I do believe then, I've stated this over and over again, but really people are stating the same points over and over again in this debate, because it's really a wall. There's only so many arguments you can have.
Right.
But as I've stated all along, the last 2 years, the president should have been, and the Republicans focused on how the Democrats are actually for open borders. And the proof is they believe in sanctuary cities, which is once you get across the border, you should be able to stay. You should be able to get benefits. They're talking now about health care. And so what they're stating is once you get across the border, you should be able to stay. That in itself is such a huge incentive to become an illegal immigrant in the United States. And now, as we know, and this is growing among Republicans, and it was Stacey Adams, a former what gubernatorial candidate of Georgia, mm-hmm. who hear the video of her out stating that yes, she believes that illegal immigrants should be able to vote in local elections. And her statement was, well, that's because they live there and they're affected by those laws. Well, that same would eventually be for federal government, too. They're affected by what the federal government also does. And so should they be able to vote in federal elections? But if you believe they illegal immigrants should be able to vote, if they should be able to get benefits, if they should be able to stay, if once they cross the border, any state or local government should not cooperate with the federal government, then you believe in open borders. I, for the life of me, I have no idea why the administration and the Republicans for the last 2 years, the Republicans for the last 15 years, haven't pounded that day in and day out, but they haven't. It's like they don't actually want to win the argument at times.
No, they don't like messy, remember?
Yeah, Boehner said it.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He's Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Welcome and good morning.
This hour for Freightliner, run smart, helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal.
I guess some people in the Midwest getting a little bit of winter there, huh?
Yeah, it looks like it. I had a shipment delayed. I ordered something over the weekend, and then I got the email saying, no, it's going to be a day or two later. Because of where it was coming from. It was coming out of the Midwest.
Wow.
So I was like, okay, no problem. No worries.
Well, it is winter.
Yeah.
It is January.
We forget because we've been rather fortunate here in Texas. We haven't really had much at all. Well, in our area of Texas out west from the DFW area, they've had some winter weather. But we really haven't had much.
Yet.
Yeah, I know.
You got to get through February 15th because we can have great winters and all of a sudden second week of February it's like no, come on, second week of February. Look, by early March I'm getting my homeowners association with still a brown lawn from last year and below freezing temperatures stating you have weeds on your lawn. Got that one last year and they actually went the first week. The first week of March, and it was below freezing at that point. So the lawns are all dormant. Your grass isn't growing, and most of it is the southern Bermuda grass, which, again, when it goes dormant, you know, the winter weeds are able to grow in it. Mm-hmm. And the only thing I had, the only weeds I had was the clover where you edge.
Right.
You know, you edge, and there's that little separation between it. I had clover in there.
I have some already.
But then they sent the notice to everybody though in the home and people were really ticked off. It's like because when you saw when they well we did the examination it was like March 4th or something. It's like it was still below freezing.
Yeah, I can't stand HOAs frankly. I noticed some out there in the alleyway putting out the trash the other day. I noticed some behind the fence some weeds behind the fence already. It's been a mild winter. Lots of water too. We've had lots of rain.
Well, it's been we've had lots of rain. It's been which means the golf courses are wet. That's the worst part about this winter. It's been wet but cold enough, not freezing cold enough, but still cold enough and windy enough not to golf. It's been windy, wet, and a little bit too cold to golf. So I hung it up about December 15th. I don't plan to pick up a club until February.
Yeah.
So you see how this winter has affected me terribly. I don't know how I'm going to survive.
You should travel.
I'm going to.
Oh, that's right.
Nice little 2-day trip to Florida and back.
All right. Go see some gators and sharks.
Gator country.
You guys go out on any boats into the ocean?
No, we won't. It's supposed to be, I think, 76. I'll be in Tampa area. It's supposed to be 76.
It's going to be, they said it's going to be on Friday. It's going to be like 73 here.
Yeah, it'll actually be warmer here than when I land in Florida. It's supposed to be 73
and
here.
We're dropping Saturday, and we're dropping into the 40s.
But. 71 there, but then it warms up 76, and it's already, I mean, everybody that, you know, and this is one of my, I won't say lifelong, because I met him when we were in college. We were bill collectors together.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we've just been great friends since, and I go see him and his wife. And we do it one time a year. As we get older, we're trying to do it more often.
Right, yeah.
Just to get together. And really, it's land, and then we're at some place on the water for the rest of the weekend. And then a lot of the people that he knows have houses near the water.
Mm-hmm.
So we just make rounds of all these people.
Right.
And a lot of these people, some of these people are actually from where I grew up in New York. So, but they all live down.
A lot of New Yorkers live in Florida.
Yeah, they all live down there now.
Yeah.
New Yorkers basically become, you know, Floridians.
Right.
That's
especially closer to retirement.
Yes, and that's...
Remember, Jerry's parents moved down there, and then all of a sudden, George's parents wanted to move. It all goes back to Seinfeld.
When you said Jerry, that's my buddy's name. So I'm
that's
what?
Right.
What are you talking about? Oh, Jerry from Seinfeld. Yes, yes. That's, people have asked me, well, you got plans to move to Florida when you retire? Well, I don't know if I'll ever retire. I'm having too much fun doing this. But I said, probably not. I lived in Navarre, Florida, between Pensacola and Fort Walton Beach for almost 3 years. Now, I lived on the Intercoastal Waterway, but I was close enough. I was, 2 minutes across the Navarre Bridge right to the Gulf Coast, some of the whitest sands on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
Where I'll never forget one time driving home. It was right before Christmas, before going back to New York, and this is probably 83, 84. And I'm driving home, and the next day I was going to New York. I remember driving home, and the sand dunes were so white, I was thinking they were snow. And it was still 80 out.
But you know, it's interesting. At night, the reflection off of that white sand is pretty cool to see. I've been to Pensacola a few times, and it was, you know, March, April, still kind of cool. But walking along the beach after the sun goes down, and you can still see things because of the reflection off the
sand. So I did my beach thing for 3 years in my 20s.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's body surf, Hobie catted, you know, mm-hmm. Actually have a trophy from a Hobie cat race.
Mm-hmm.
You know, did all that kind of, was it sail surfing, whatever, call it surf sailing.
Mm-hmm.
Did all that stuff. Had that thing where I was in music radio at that time, so had that, but also understood how that when you live on the beach on weekends, your metabolism and everything slows down completely. I mean, life is just shut off. I have had that feel. I had it in my 20s, and it was great. But when I visit my buddy this weekend and his wife, the palm trees will be there and everything else. And it's almost like a dream world that I can't live that way in a normal life anymore. I don't know what it is. I go mm-hmm. there. I enjoy every aspect of it. You know, maybe we'll go to Clearwater Beach again, which is always great to sit, you know, at Clearwater. But where I live now in Texas is very much because there's an escarpment, which is like 3 or 4 miles of rolling hills right up against my lake. It looks like New York. I don't know what it is, but I just don't want that. I don't want to live in a palm tree climate. I can't explain it. As mm-hmm. much as I love going there to visit,
mm-hmm.
it's like, no, I don't want to do that. I like living. I like living with more trees, more traditional trees and evergreens. And, you know, a lot of the trees that you'll see up north, you even have down here in the south.
I like hills and mountains. Yeah. I don't mind visiting the beach, but I like mountains.
Same with me. I like, for some reason, there's a comfort, and our lake buttresses right up against this escarpment, which is probably about, you've got rolling hills of maybe 800 to 1,000 feet high. Mm-hmm. You know, as they call it, what, Dallas Hill Country.
Mm-hmm.
And so the nice little rolling hills about 4 or 5 miles long, and you drive through them, and you're like, oh, wow, this is really great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but Texas Hill Country is beautiful.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
I have family with lots of land down there.
And, down near Austin,
It is really great to just cut up through the middle of Texas, especially this time of year. I love it this time of year. Yeah, but
and
the real mountains, we have to go to Colorado or, you know, out to the Sierras.
And so I love going there. I just wouldn't, Florida, I don't know, as much as I love it, and as much as I loved my time in Navarre, Florida, because
mm-hmm.
I was a beach bum. I really, really was. I did a morning, you know, rock radio show.
Mm-hmm.
And did all the stuff that, you know, you're supposed to do in rock radio and all the live appearances and then weekends and even the things that we did, promotions. Everything we did was on the water.
Yeah, right.
And it was great. I'll never forget being in a Hobie Cat race and, you know, there are dolphins. There we are in this race on Choctahatchee Bay outside of Fort Walton Beach. It was February, so we're all in wetsuits because the water was still cold.
Mm-hmm.
And these dolphins are all, you know, just as we're racing, they're jumping right. I mean, you...
Yeah.
When that happened, I went, well, doesn't matter if that ever happens again. I experienced it once.
Mm-hmm.
It's like when I went up in the F-16 with the Thunderbirds.
Mm-hmm.
I will tell you, though, after that, I will have said, after I went up with in the F-16 with the Thunderbirds, and we sat at the end of the runway for 10 minutes before we took off, and your anticipation's just building up. My blood pressure must have been 5,000 over 1,000.
Mm-hmm.
And then we took off, and he said, okay, let's take off, and you're only about probably 50 feet off the ground. He goes, okay, let's go straight up. Found a hole in the cloud. We go straight up through the cloud, turn around. We're upside down over the clouds, probably 30,000 feet like that, over the clouds, and I can see Mount Rainier from 200 miles away outside of Seattle, upside down in an F-16.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, I said, I don't need to do anything else in my life.
Mm-hmm.
I can die right.
You've seen Mount Rainier upside down.
Rainier,
you can die now.
I can. You know, that's really, that thought's always been through my head. It's like, what else mm-hmm. can I experience? Well, and I still haven't seen the Grand Canyon yet. And you know, I want to do stuff like that. And there's stuff. People say, do you want to travel worldwide? I said, there's so much stuff I'll never get to see in America that I want to see.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, I don't know. Maybe I will in a few years if I ever retire. But unless you retire in this business, you can't get 2 weeks off. Unless
right.
you do, unless you do a cruise with an advertiser and take listeners,
yeah, to yeah. Europe,
to Europe, yeah, and that doesn't happen. That doesn't happen on this show.
No,
so you can't take 2 weeks off. So that's really out. So it's like if I wanted to travel like that, I'd have to retire. So there's really so many places I'd like to see in the United States. Maybe some in Alaska. I probably, but Alaska State Troopers maybe want to see Alaska.
Yeah, I mean, that kind of scenery to me, is just, that's always going to be a draw.
And then high-definition TV, maybe when I got my first one and then all these different nature programs, here is Alaska.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, some parts of Canada, and I'll never get to see all of it, but look, I got to be upside down like with the Thunderbirds. And right. they didn't let us break the speed of sound, though.
No?
No. But we did an ocean barge. We did zoom past it. We did a flyby of it and turned on the smoke, and all the people came out on the deck and were waving to us. We're 70 miles off the coast, you know, in the Pacific
mm-hmm.
from Portland. That was cool.
Did you drop a sandwich on them or something?
No, but I spotted it before the pilot. I said, look, there's a ship. He goes, you caught it before I did.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, let's buzz them. Fine with me. But he said, since we can't break the speed of sound, they wouldn't allow them to do it. Mm-hmm. We went as close as you can get and as low as you could get to the water without being dangerous and near some clouds, so you got a feeling of how fast you're going, you know, when you're approaching, you know, the 700 mile an hour mark.
Sure, right, yeah.
So that was good. And they let me fly it too. I did the 8-point turn or the 6-point turn, whatever it was.
Mm.
He did it perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
Someday you got to see the video of me attempting to do it, you know.
Yeah, right.
I didn't do it as well as the pilot did.
Yeah, I'm guessing there's a reason for that.
Yeah, I
wonder. Has something to do with a word called training.
I'll never. But you know what really impressed me more than the experience?
Mm.
The professionalism of not just the pilots but the ground crew.
Yeah.
And we sat the next day after the show was over and everything else because I got to hang out with them. And I was able to go to their party and everything else. But the professionalism blows you away. Mm-hmm. And you walk away from that. I never thought that. That's really when I really learned that people will blow me away more than an experience will.
Yeah, growing up around Air Force bases in the military all my life, it was interesting when you move into, you know, more civilian territory and people didn't act that way. You know, especially by the time I got, I guess, to junior high school, maybe my freshman year, mm-hmm. more and more experience away from military settings. And it was interesting that it wasn't always that way. You were expecting, you know, the yes, sir, and the no, sir, and, you know, of course, salutes. My dad was a non-commissioned officer, so he had to salute all of the officers. And it's a different world. It's a different take.
It's a different world, but you have extremely knowledgeable and professional people mm-hmm. that know how to get the job done.
Yeah.
That without question, mm-hmm. know how to, and so I was so impressed by that. But yeah, and we started off by saying happy January, happy winter.
Yeah.
866-90-RUD-EYE.
Tips from J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated on DOT drug and alcohol testing, medical and recreational uses. More and more states continue to legalize marijuana, both for medicinal and recreational use. Canada also legalized the drug late last year. But if you are driving through or live in one of the places where it's legal and decide it would be okay to consume marijuana, you would be wrong. Since marijuana use remains illegal under federal law in the U.S. and the trucking industry is federally regulated, drivers are not allowed to use it for recreational or medicinal purposes, and the Americans with Disabilities Act does not require employers to accommodate an employee's use of marijuana. While the laws might differ from state to state, the policy for drivers is clear. Marijuana use violates the DOT drug and alcohol policy, no matter where you are driving. This tip was brought to you by J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated. Visit us at jjkeller.com.
This has been the Meritor Driver Report, brought to you by Pilot Flying J, Shell Rotella, and Meritor Aftermarket. Run with the bull.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carlin. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE.
This hour for Freightliner. Run smart. Helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal.
We'll get to your calls and comments coming up following the bottom of the hour. The House this week is slated to take up two continuing resolutions aimed at temporarily reopening the government as negotiations remain stalled. House Appropriations Committee Chairwoman Nita Lowry, the Democrat from New York, introduced the stopgap measures yesterday, the first which would provide funding for closed government agencies through February 1st, and a second that would provide funding through February 28th. Neither measure would provide additional funding for the barrier along the U.S.-Mexico border. The House has done its job and passed six pieces of legislation to reopen the government, but the Senate Republicans refused to take yes for an answer and end the shutdown, Lowry said in a statement. It is critical that we reopen the federal government. But these two new continuing resolutions offer President Trump and Senate Republicans additional options to end the shutdown while allowing time for negotiation on the border security and immigration policy. We should pass them into law without delay. Now, they do that after Senator Lindsey Graham came out and said that's what the president should do. The president mm-hmm. has rejected that. And so you look at what was the motivation to do that. Are the Democrats feeling the pressure and so they wish to offer something?
Right. Well, there's the question. So if the polls are changing, if there is this, I don't know, if there is an effect that they're having with the rank and file Democrats, here's my question. Did the effect have anything to do with what the president did specifically, or the fact that, and we said this a couple of weeks ago, we're having the debate about border security.
Mm-hmm.
Say what you will, or whichever side you are on, we're having the debate. Now, the Democrats don't want to have the debate. At least leadership doesn't want to have the debate in front of the American people.
We're actually not having a debate.
Right.
You have one side that is promoting border security. The other side is saying nothing. All they're talking about is the shutdown.
And is that working more toward the benefit of the president? The fact that Democrats, if you look at the polls, they support border security. Are they shifting? Is there something going on right now on Capitol Hill with Democrats because they're hearing from constituents?
Or here's the other thing. Are they not feeling the pressure and they're like, yeah, let's extend this thing out. Give Donald Trump another 3 weeks. We'll still be at the same point again. Mm. And he continues to get the blame, according to the polls. Now, as we said, the blame can be taken two ways, though. The president said, no, I'll proudly, you know, take blame back in December. Many of his followers believe, he should be doing it. It's the right thing to do. And if Trump didn't exist, we wouldn't be talking about border security, which is why we're having the shutdown right now. So it all depends how you look at it.
Not on Ambien, there's Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE.
This hour for Freightliner, Run Smart, helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal. Got a new addition to the Red Eye family, Red Eye's Extra Mile podcast, where we talk to trucking industry experts from all walks of the industry. In fact, we've got a brand new one up. And if you want to check it out, you can go there to our website, redeyeradioshow.com. The Extra Mile podcast, we'll be doing a lot more of those. You'll be hearing a lot more about them. But again, you can tune in anytime. Just go to redeyeradioshow.com for more details.
Is this the best a man can get?
Here we go. All right.
The Gillette ad.
Yeah.
Have you seen it?
Yeah, I've seen it. Yeah.
Man. I love Greg Gutfeld. The only one lauding the Gillette ad work in media, mm-hmm. and advertising. Everyone else sees it for what it is. A smarmy, condescending virtual signal aimed at the hardworking, decent men they've been price gouging for years.
Wow.
That they attack toxic masculinity.
Okay, great. What is that? And don't accuse me of it.
Yeah, don't accuse me of it. Go after the people. Why don't you maybe...
Name some names.
Maybe you could look at some of the men at NBC, Harvey Weinstein. Maybe you can have those pictures on and say they're wrong. Why do you have normal people on there?
Right.
I don't know, and you and I talked about this a long time ago when the Harvey Weinstein thing came out, and you know he had some of his defenders saying, well, back then in the 70s it was different. I had to mention that I worked for Harvey Weinstein's company at that time, where he was a rock promoter in Buffalo, New York, went to the State University College at Buffalo. State University of Buffalo, I'm sorry. There's a difference. University of Buffalo is where he went. And then he got into rock promotions, booked rock bands, owned a theater called the Century Theater, and then owned a club, a rock club called Stage One. The Police played there when Roxanne broke out, like the first week. Hmm. But I'd worked there in 79... 80 and maybe part of 81. It was just a part-time job. I was working there because a buddy of mine, he was working 7 days a week and wanted a day off, so I would fill in for him a lot. Saw some great bands there, which is really cool, but it wasn't allowed back then. Sexual harassment wasn't allowed back then.
No.
There was no toxic masculinity inside the workplace. It was accepted either there or when I was working at the bank, because I was in the banking business at that time. Sexual harassment, toxic masculinity, it wasn't. Look, it's something that has never been accepted in my family, in my friends, in my group of friends, whatever toxic masculinity is. I'll just say, because I'm not really sure what toxic masculinity is. I know what sexual harassment is. I know what sexual assault is. And that was never accepted in the group of male friends that I have ever dealt with, ever. They didn't act like Harvey Weinstein. They didn't act like any of a. I'm trying to think of who at NBC. Who got hit at NBC?
Matt Lauer.
Matt Lauer got hit at NBC. Bill O'Reilly and the allegations against him and lawsuits that he settled. By the way, people still defended him. You don't pay off tens of millions in lawsuits if you're innocent, folks.
No, you spend tens of millions on great lawyers.
Yeah, exactly. And we had people defending Bill O'Reilly. Sorry, you can't defend him. You know, and those are the people that should be held accountable. Bill Cosby. If you want to do it, put those faces on a Gillette commercial, but don't make it sound like it's the average man that exists out there. That's where the insult comes, or where the insult is taken by a lot of men who watch that, as if it's commonplace and accepted with men. And it's not commonplace and accepted with men.
No, it's not.
It exists.
And if they're, you know, you want to classify an entire group is what you're doing.
Yeah, exactly.
That's exactly right. What that right. Label does. Toxic masculinity. That they refuse to define, and comes from essentially the extremists out there that want you to believe, or want everyone to believe, that you're wrong for being a man.
And this comes out of the American Psychological Association and the report that they came out last week on, and they had to backtrack on, if you saw that.
Yeah.
They had to backtrack big time on it. Well, what we mean are the men who actually take it too far. Because they were talking about the fact that, aggression and competitiveness are a problem. And those things that exist, in men, which, aggression and competitiveness are what can lead. And that's a bunch of hogwash.
Well, you're branding, you're labeling an entire group.
Yeah. That the best that men can be, what are you talking about? You focus on the people that do what is wrong. Those are the people that you focus on.
If you want to call someone out, yeah.
You want to call someone out as an individual, you do it. You don't call all men out. I am not responsible for what Harvey Weinstein did.
No. Nor will I accept responsibility right. In some kind of labeling, and then join hands with a bunch of people that are all saying we're going to be better.
Right.
I may need some improvement, but it's not because I'm behaving like Harvey Weinstein.
You and I have talked about this, and now as this is my totally 36th year in the broadcasting industry. Because, you know, when you saw what happened at NBC and other places, Fox, where apparently this was going on and accepted in those areas. And that's when you and I looked at each other and said, any business that I've ever been in, broadcasting for 36 years, banking, industry, whatever I've done, it was never accepted. And I got into the workforce back in 1972. And it was never accepted, ever. It might be in some areas, as I said, was never accepted by me, was never accepted by anybody who I worked for, and was never accepted by any of my friends or the core of friends that I've ever had. I'm not going to be blamed for what other people do.
Right. And that's what you're doing when you start lumping in and saying, essentially what you're telling me is all men need to be better. All humans need to improve. End of story. Everybody can strive to be a better person every day. That's one thing. You start classifying in groups in a blanketed fashion. Maybe it's time to get a new razor.
866, if you want to get in, 866-90-RED-EYE. I just had to mention that, though. I just thought about that as we were getting into the segment there. I had just seen the story on the ad, so I wanted to bring that up. All right, ready to go to some calls, comments?
Why not?
On the government shutdown, we go to Mike in Tucson, Arizona. Mike, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much. You guys have a good show.
Thanks.
Listen, you were talking before about being with those soldier employees and how professional they were.
Yes.
I want you to imagine this picture right now in all of your audience, all the white headstones of all the military cemeteries and our great soldiers who lie under those that give us the life we have today. And I'll associate that to the dreadful job that these politicians are doing with this shutdown. They're abandoning their jobs and still getting paid. This is not the fault of Donald Trump in one iota. It's the fault of the Democrats using the federal employees as footballs. It's the fault of the Republicans who had the House, the Senate, and the POTUS and couldn't get anything done. So you media, not you, the mainstream media people need to stop blaming the president and put the blame where it goes. And I won't want everybody to remember all the soldiers who lie under white headstones that give us the life that we have today. I'm not concerned.
Right, and I would agree with you on that. The problem is Trump was willing to take blame for the shutdown.
So what? He's a guy. We wouldn't be in the position we are today if the Democrats and the politicians.
Well,
using the federal employees as political football.
Well, that's fine and dandy. I understand it completely.
I will vote for Trump next time after that.
So will I, too, but there are many that look at it and wanted Trump to shut down the government and believe that accepting blame is a good thing for him to do, not a bad thing. So that's why we said earlier, you can take this in a variety of different ways. It all depends. There are people who can go, I'm glad that Trump shut down the government. Well, they're blaming Trump, but not in a bad way.
Well, and clearly, either the president doesn't care about any internals right now that are working against him, or the internals aren't working against him.
Yeah, well, like I said, we brought up both sides of the poll that say that the majority of Americans say it's Trump and the Republicans that are responsible for the shutdown. Call that blame, call that responsible.
Yeah.
But over the last year, it has moved the number of people that support the wall. So the message is getting across. So it's a mixed bag. My point was Trump said, look, I'll be proud to be responsible for shutting down the government.
Mm-hmm.
And your response was he's just a guy. No, he's not just a guy. He's president of the United States. He's the one that has the ability to shut down the government, and he's the one that said, I'd be proud to do so. Now, I don't take that as a negative. It's just the reality.
Right.
You're taking it as the last caller, you're taking it as a negative. No way, no way. Well, he said it's okay for him to be blamed. He'll take responsibility for it.
And clearly the blame for, well, right now, the open border situation falls strictly on Republicans up until now and the Democrats. The president wins this debate on border control every time, but he's actually got to win the debate.
Well, as I said earlier, you can look at it and say Trump is responsible for this because if Trump didn't exist, the government wouldn't be shut down because they wouldn't be talking about border security. Neither would be concerned about border security.
Right.
So if Trump didn't exist, if Trump is the new element in here, if he is the new variable in this entire equation, and if he wasn't here, the government wouldn't be shut down. But you can also say this, and it's a tough reality. because I've seen a lot of Trump supporters say Trump is standing strong. No, he wasn't. Trump conceded everything until the conservative media got on his case.
Mm-hmm.
He conceded everything. That's what started this.
Mm-hmm.
Trump backed off. That's why Sarah Huckabee. What are we? Do we have selective memories or what? It's the administration that said, no, we don't need to get the money from Congress. We can do it on our own. And that's when the conservative media went after him in an extremely passionate way.
He built consensus on tax reform. It's easy and should have been too easy 2 years ago to build consensus on this.
He should have, yes. Well, but that's why we believe he's wrong in marketing. But let's not forget reality, folks. Reality does exist. Trump was willing to crumble on this.
Mm-hmm. And he wins the debate on it. He doesn't need to crumble, and no, it didn't need to get to this point.
No, it didn't. 866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carney, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE.
This hour for Freightliner. Run smart. Help you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal.
Yeah, I mean, it may be inconvenient for people to realize it. And look, I think the president standing his ground is good. But the reason the president is standing his ground is because of Drudge and Ann Coulter and Mark Levin and Rush Limbaugh and a bunch of other conservative media opinion makers out there who took the president to task when they were back, when the White House clearly was backing off and said they didn't need the money from Congress, they'll get it in other ways. And it was in that 48 to 72 hours where the conservative media reminded the president that his base was absolutely against the direction of where he was going. So I think it's important to not rewrite the facts of how we got to this point. And it was the conservative media that got the president to stand his ground as he's doing right now and so far has stood his ground.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara.
And what do you got? What are you laughing at?
New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio defended his plan to provide health care for all New Yorkers, including illegal immigrants. On CNN's State of the Union with Jake Tapper, he stopped short of explaining exactly how he planned to offset the costs, saying only that the wrong people had all the money and he planned to correct that.
Okay.
You know, one of the things that you and I were talking about yesterday was, and it was in the last portion of the show, you know, where are the Democrats going? And I forgot where I read it, where I just read there. That came from the Daily Caller, what I just read there. Maybe it was, here it is. Yeah, it was the Wall Street Journal, the op-ed piece of Gerald Seeb from Wall Street Journal. A Democratic narrative misses the reality of 2018. Because you and I were talking about the fact that if you look at it, if you look at, for example, whether it's Julian Castro or Kamala Harris or Cory Booker or Robert Francis O'Rourke, that all the young ones, if you take the ones that are Elizabeth Warren, they all believe in the same thing.
Right.
It's extremely radical left. If you think about it, it's Medicare for all.
Mm-hmm.
It is guaranteed income. It is free college. It's free health care. Everything is free. And as we've talked about, the only thing is now that they're all in this little group, they're going to be upping what is going to be free. But they're as far left as you can get. They're as far unrealistic about being in the real world as you could possibly be, because we can't afford to do it. We can't afford what we're doing right now. We're going to be running trillion-dollar debts, deficits every single year, and that's before they want to add $2 or $3 trillion to it. And if you tax all the rich, you still don't cover 25% of what they want to spend.
Mm-hmm.
And so you ask yourself, where are the Democrats in general? And he makes a point here in the Wall Street Journal. Everyone knows that the key voters for Democrats is young and liberal, except last year's election shows that's not exactly the case. And he went through the actual demographics of who voted. And showed a survey of more than 115,000 self-identified 2008 midterm voters found that just 15% of those who voted Democratic last November were ages 18 through 29. The largest contingent of Democrat voters, 36%, actually were ages 45 through 64. All told, 60% of Democrat voters age 45 or older. In ideological terms, there is no doubt that the party is moving to the left. An increased share of Democrats are identifying themselves as liberals, yet that movement can be overstated. While half of Democrats last year identified themselves as liberal, 48% called themselves moderate or conservatives, and moderates outnumbered the very liberal Democrats by a 2-to-1 margin. And what does he bring up here? He brings up the chances of whom? The former Vice President Joe Biden.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we talked about that last night on the show, and that is, all right, where do they go? What does the party, I guess, once you get into the race, because we know how the DNC orchestrated the whole thing in 2016. And there's going to be strong support for what? It's always about the strongest candidate. Sorry, Bernie supporters, Kamala Harris supporters. If you're not the strongest candidate in a very clear running and you're not in on those polls, this person versus Trump, then it's likely the party is again going to usher in the nominee that can do that, that fits that bill. And if it's Biden, if Biden runs and those polls hold, I suspect that's the way it'll go down. You look at a debate stage with a Biden versus a Trump, and a Biden will scoff and dismiss like he's always done on a debate stage. Any time that he's, in fact, speaking, he's very dismissive about, you know, anybody in the opposition. And he is, dare I say, pretty good at it. And
he beat Paul Ryan in that debate, vice presidential debate.
Yeah. And the idea is to stay calm, cool, collect on your thoughts. And his thoughts will be empty. Make no mistake. But that's the guy on the stage that you'll see. Because up until then, let's say if Biden runs, up until then, everybody else is going to be racing to the I hate Trump top of the hill. And they're going to be proving I hate Trump more.
But here's where I see the biggest challenge, and I can look at the shutdown right here. And this is what I believe is a distinct possibility, and this is where I sense the Democrats are going.
Hmm.
Even the rank and file who don't agree with the Democrats on border security.
Right.
They don't. We know what the Democrats were just saying as recently as 3-4 years ago. We know what the mainstream was talking about. I believe that even the party and even the rank and file, that they hate Trump so much, they don't care if he stands for the core beliefs that they stand for. They hate him.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe you're seeing this right now. I believe that in another time, if it was a Trump, now this is imaginary, purely hypothetical, but if it was a Trump that they liked, that they would attempt to bargain for border security. They would attempt to get DACA. They would go for the big Biden, probably, if it was a Biden-led party, would probably be going for the big deal. Give Trump the $5 billion. Get legal status for all the illegals in the country and citizenship for the DACA kids.
Yeah.
That's what he probably would be going. And on top of that, throw in maybe not Medicare for all, but something that would be the government subsidizing a heck of a lot more of health care. He would probably go for the grand deal. Democrats today, even the leadership, who probably is not as radical as an Ocasio-Cortez or any of the, you know, the five or six young ones that are for Medicare for all, because they know they can't. They know it. Look, you had Jake Tapper. You had Andrew Cuomo.
Mm-hmm.
Not Andrew, excuse me.
Chris
Cuomo.
Mm-hmm.
On talking about, they know, as left as they are, they know you can't afford to do everything that they're talking about. They brought it up. But I believe the leadership realizes that the hatred for Donald Trump is stronger than bargaining in any way. It is pure out and out hatred. I disagree with Trump at times, like I do any president. I don't hate anybody. They hate him.
Yeah.
Just go to social media and look at it. Look at the headlines that exist out there. Look at the lies that have been thrown out at this particular president. The biggest one, that he colluded with the Russians to hack the election. Hmm. You know, look. It was put in such clear terms yesterday. I can't remember where I saw it, but I said, look, it's just simple. The Trump fired the head of the FBI. The FBI didn't like it. They investigated him for a counterintelligence investigation for treason.
Right.
Everybody knows. They knew at that point. They knew. How many times did Comey talk about, even before he was fired? Comey talked about the fact, I believe before he was fired, that the dossier wasn't credible. He said he didn't believe it was ever credible.
Yep.
And yet they're jumping on that. They hated him. There is this hatred of Trump, who was once loved.
Hmm.
That would be an interesting sociological survey. When did the hatred start? What was the moment when liberals will say, we used to love Trump and then we hated him? Was it when he attacked Hillary Clinton? I mean, was it
when he decided to run?
When he decided to run as a Republican?
And became a threat to Hillary Clinton, right, being right president.
Because there is a insane, I can disagree with anybody. We do it all the time. We can disagree with anybody out there. We do it constantly, and we make our points. There is no hatred. I have hatred towards nobody. It's not. To me, it's a waste of time, because I'm too concerned with making the debate point than throwing out hatred. And I know that if people can sense that I hate somebody, that I lose part of my argument. I lose part of my ability to convince them that my argument is right if they believe I automatically hate their candidate and then therefore hate them. Well, I would never argue that way. But that's what you see. And it's an incredible, it's a loathing, it's a hatred. It's a, it's, to me, even when they were going after Bush, you knew that part of it was just politics. You know, so I mean, when when Bill Maher says, hey, you know, Bush, we really knew he wasn't Hitler. Mm-hmm. I believe that Bill Maher's telling the truth.
Mm-hmm.
That he probably knew that, he made the decision to go to war, but he's not really a Hitler. But this guy, I think that, I don't believe they believe that Trump is Hitler, but their hatred of him is as great as it would be for Hitler.
Yeah, I think that it is opposed with no excuses. It is a hatred that knows no bounds. It is, and which is why I think it's really, you probably need to be cautiously optimistic about 2020 if you're supporting Trump. Now, it will be a binary decision, like it always is for a lot of people. But it really is about that turnout, and it is about that connection with those people in the middle. And where is it that those people that the left thinks they can make that connection? If he decides to run, it's going to be Biden. It's going to be milquetoast Biden. And the downside of that is something else we discussed recently. The left going back to their old ways of not really talking, not really promoting what they believe, just run, be milquetoast during the campaign, and then sign in legislation that goes a lot further than what you were promoting.
Except for the young ones.
Yes.
Because the young ones are promoting exactly what they want, and they're trying to, you know, one-up each other on the free stuff.
Well, and that's going to work on the local level. That's how you get an Ocasio-Cortez, you know, to be one of the votes. And then you have the milquetoast president sign it into law. The question is, does that more extreme left control it to the point that the DNC will have no choice but to usher one of them in?
Well, here's the interesting point. They're all talking about all this stuff now. If they are, when we get to the debates, which will start, you know, this late summer, fall, will they still be promoting it? Will there be a few of them and the ones that are totally socialist? And we're talking about the Cory Bookers, the Kamala Harris, the O'Rourke, or will O'Rourke back off? Will he not take the positions that those other candidates, Julian Castro, that, you know, again, when he talked about the fact that he's for Medicare for all, unless they believe now that Medicare for all is viewed not as a socialist position, but Medicare for all, because they view that the Republicans now want free stuff, that Medicare for all is now viewed differently, that it's not viewed as a socialist position where free college and the guaranteed income might be, but Medicare for all now has become more of a middle position, even with Republicans. How far do they believe that they will go? And then will we see a break off, or what will the polls show if Biden decides to run and does play milquetoast, middle of the road? He knows how to bring people together. He has the experience. He's been a loyal Democrat for the longest time. Yes, we need to improve health care, but Medicare for all is not the way to go. Maybe it will be in the future, but not now. It's not the right thing. No, we can't afford guaranteed income for all, but we do have the resources to help people more. Blah, 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 blah. You reject the far left, but you still make the point that you will take care of everybody just in different and more fiscally responsible ways without telling anybody how, and that's how you race to the top as a Biden.
It's the non-specifics. And that's exactly the way the party wants them to play. Because once you start getting into the specifics, the most extreme and the activist part of your party wants to take the microphone from you. Don't get to specifics. Never get to that point. You promise the, well, hope and change. Big, broad terminology.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
Front on radio, he's Eric Carly. I'm Gary McNamara. Remember, it was earlier this month that Andrew Cuomo endorse the hypothetical candidacy of Joe Biden.
Right.
That he's the only one that's got a chance.
Yeah.
And so it'll really be interesting to see what happens. I just looked at the schedule. The DNC announced in late December that they will have six primary debates that will happen in 2019. Possibility of forums or debate as early as June.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Yeah.
And so, like I said, we're just a couple of months away. Everybody's, because the campaigning's now is going to start. And so really in a month, expect, and this is going to be the fascinating thing. Is every candidate just going to attack Trump? Eventually they have to attack one another.
That's something I thought about yesterday during the show as we were talking about Biden. I mean, eventually they do have to say, well, I'm better than this person because this person is wrong because. And of course, that all, you know, drops off once the eventual nominee, you know, is in that position. But certainly they're going to have to debate each other. And the first debate will be about how much they hate Trump. And the other one will say, well, no, I hate Trump more. That will be the competition.
Well, when you've got five or six or seven or eight candidates that are for all that, well, we'll get to that here in just a moment here.
For Omnitrax, here's your forecast.
A very active weather week is taking shape in the west. A large closed low will usher in waves of Pacific moisture into California through the day today. Then for Wednesday into Thursday, it's another powerful system that'll plow into the west coast. Overall, heavy rain, mountain snow, gusty winds, rough surf, possible flooding, especially near the recent wildfire burn scars, we could see the likelihood of mudslides. That's all for the west. For the central part of the nation, things will remain primarily dry today, with the exception of the Chicagoland area. In and around northern Illinois, northern Indiana, we do have the chance for freezing rain today. Chicago will top out at near 35. For Boston, sunny, 35. New York City, 39 and clear. Atlanta, sunny and 50 with showers for Thursday. Dallas, 54. Rain later tonight. Your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90 Red Eye.
A show for everyone, including those living in a delusional world. Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Of course, media is on the fact that Trump served fast food to the Clemson College Football Championship team.
Yeah.
Burgers, fries, pizza.
Yeah, nuggets.
Saw a couple of the players on their Twitter accounts. One guy. Did you see the one guy? I don't know who he is. One of the football players. It's like loaded up. He's got bought like five burgers,
right.
Packages. You know, when he's walking away from the table,
right? Well, it's interesting. The president paid for it himself. The chefs at the White House are on furlough because of the shutdown, and so they just went out and he said, "Look, this is all American food: burgers and fries and pizza. So this is what we're serving today." And I thought it actually was pretty cool. In that, of all of the teams, you know, that have visited the White House, right? That's probably going to be a memorable experience for them when they say, "Yeah, we showed up and it was all fast food." You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, who remembers the rubber chicken? Nobody really cares about that. You're gonna think about, first of all, who was president at the time, the fact that you got to go, the win itself. Of course, is paramount. But beyond that, that's going to be one of those little side notes. Yeah, there was a government shutdown. So the president himself ordered takeout,
well,
essentially, for everybody.
I did read a couple of reports where they picked up on the novelty of and the uniqueness of the situation that they were in.
Yeah. No, they were all smiling in the video that I saw. And there could be, you know, others that were kind of complaining, but I don't know. The ones that were all approaching the table had these huge smiles on their face. You know, so I think that's probably going to be one of the takeaways from that.
According to the Washington Post, Poole report noted that the Clemson players arrived shortly before 6 p.m. as the White House band played a rendition of Michael Jackson's Billie Jean.
Okay.
Some players whooped, quote, per the report, when they saw the spread.
There you go. Yeah, I don't know. I didn't really feel any tension from the media in that room in the video that I watched. You know, it was just, this is what it is. The president, you know, got his own credit card out and paid for the food and said during the, when in his, because the president talked to the media briefly and said, you know, we're doing this because of the shutdown. You know, we don't have any chefs. In fact, they had one White House staffer that was not furloughed that basically laid everything out. They lit some candles, you know, all these burgers stacked on.
Well, are
silver
all,
platters.
Are all the chefs gone? I mean, does the president have to get his own meals now?
I think they're all gone. I think they're all furloughed.
Yep. So does Secret Service go out and get him stuff?
Now there could be one personal chef. I don't know. I'm not sure because you know he does have his own personal chef. So I don't know. I mean that is assigned to him because he's president. But I don't know if that person is furloughed or not. Of course, of all the presidents, well, pretty much any president afford to bring someone in.
I mean, did he have a chef beforehand? I mean, a lot of rich people have chefs.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine having a chef.
Right. No, I can't imagine.
Gary, what would you like now?
No.
An Atkins shake?
Well, you know, my wife and I both cook, so
yeah,
you
know, so do I.
We kind of go back and forth and what we like to eat. But if you're at that level, they talked about his trips to McDonald's, unscheduled trips to McDonald's, where he would go and get what, a quarter pounder with cheese and fries. So the Secret Service would either go, and they said one time, there was a report one time he went. Now, the Secret Service, of course, was in charge and ordered for him, but he went along.
Well, and remember the reason that he gave.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a standard that all fast food places have, Wendy's and McDonald's. There's a certain standard of cleanliness and all that. You're relatively sure you're getting safe food.
Well, there's that, and he was trying to get the White House chefs to recreate his favorite burger, which is the quarter pounder with cheese. And he said they never really got it right, so they just started making trips to McDonald's. You remember during the campaigning? He would get back on his jet, and they would have McDonald's
waiting
for him.
Yes, when the campaign stopped, they had to figure out when he's going to be there. You know, when's he coming back? Because somebody's got to make the run right before he gets back to the plane so that the fast food is... Are you insulted? Let's put it this way. Are you insulted as a White House chef? When you're asked to make something that could be comparable to a quarter pounder and you can't do it for the president. It doesn't come out right. Yeah. Are you insulted or are you sort of happy that you can't do that? As a chef,
probably a little bit of both. You're probably making the note for your book you're going to write. I would be. I would look at it all as a great experience going, okay, well, I couldn't get it done, you know, and my version of a burger, even as hard as I tried, didn't get it there. And the president went to McDonald's instead. This is going to help sell books. You know, you look at it as the experience itself.
Yeah, that would be. It would have to be interesting to be somebody, and some of those White House people, I don't know how many are there now, but there are some White House people that have served three or four administrations.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Some of the staff in there.
Right, right.
That has to be an interesting job.
Yeah. What would that be like on any given day? Because you're thinking, on one hand, you're certainly safe because of the Secret Service and the detail, the security detail surrounding the White House. But you also know that, I mean, it's really the world focus, not just a target for any would-be enemy, but, I mean, the world focus. You're in this building that A is sacred, and B, because it's sacred, you're just, I would feel almost like I'm, at least for the first maybe couple of months, that it I was walking on eggshells.
It would be intimidating.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know that it wouldn't, for me, ever not be intimidating.
Yeah.
It would always likely be intimidating to the point that, and because people, you know, ask, I've been asked, well, yeah, would you ever like to go to the White House? Go to the White House is one thing. I don't know that I could ever sleep at the White House. What if you were invited, you know, to stay over, a president invited you to stay over.
I couldn't. I
you know, that they do sometimes.
I wouldn't
guests.
Be able to sleep.
I don't think there's any way I could sleep.
No, I wouldn't sleep.
Now, Trump only sleeps, what, 3.5 hours?
Well, okay.
So maybe, for him.
Well, maybe I would. I'd sleep as much as the president does.
Because for him, it really didn't change.
He gets you up.
But he's always lived that way.
you're sleeping over, and he gets you up. You finally get to sleep, and he wakes you up at 3 o'clock. Hey, what are you doing? Come on. We're
to go have breakfast. You just went to bed at midnight. But the, you know, the, I mean, I would think it would be, because for him, his security detail, you know, he had, it was pretty tight. So I'm not going to compare it to the Secret Service, but it was up there at Trump Tower. It's always been that way his whole life. So that's something that he's probably used to. That most people that go into that position, unless you've been a high-profile governor or something, you're not used to that.
You know, I've been in front of the White House, I think, 3 or 4 times, and it's always intimidating just seeing it there. Mm-hmm. The one thing that always amazes me is you think it's in a much more open area.
Right.
And it's much closer to a lot of buildings than you would think. And you go, oh, wait a minute. Okay. Well, I mean, I sit there and immediately I'm thinking security.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first thing. I look at the white, well, that doesn't seem secure. There's a rooftop right over there, one 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 over there. How do they keep them all covered?
Because
you think the president is going to look out the window. How do you know? How do you got that covered?
Mm-hmm.
And they probably do.
Oh, yeah.
They probably figured all that out.
Yeah.
But it's the first thing that I think of. But. I was always intimidated standing outside the gates of the White House going, wow.
Yeah,
there
sure.
It is.
Yeah. Now, they had to go to like a handful of different restaurants. So they got pizza from one place. They got burgers from 2 different places. And imagine that order. Because, you know, they have to say it's for the Clemson Tigers at the White House.
Yeah.
So imagine being at work one day nearby fast food, and all of a sudden you get that order, right? The president, here you go to swipe the card. It says Trump on it.
Did you get tipped for that?
I bet they did. I bet he tipped.
Here's the thing. If you were president, do you think you'd ever be not intimidated still being in the White House? It would always intimidate me. There'd always be a sense, I know that even if I was president of the United States, I guess it's intimidating to go through that process, but if you're a politician and you've grown, you know, done that, it wouldn't be intimidating. But even being a congressman, when I walked up to the Capitol building, when I walked up, you know, outside the Supreme Court building, all of it to me was intimidating. It was like a little bit of numbness in me. And I think even if I was president of the United States, being in the White House, I just know me. I would think that I would always think, why am I here? I'm not worthy. I would be thinking that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's probably different for this particular president, you know, given the fact that he's always, you know, he's been a household name for decades.
Yeah, exactly.
So he's been famous for a long, long time. And maybe for certain presidents who were high-profile governors, maybe it's not so intimidating. I got the sense, though, from George W. Bush that, you know, it was one of those things, and I think they all do. You take it extremely seriously because once you walk, and I believe that's the
whole point
with this president.
I would think it would be intimidating. And then, yeah, you might have that point. What am I doing here with all the, you know, you think of it, George Washington on Abraham Lincoln. Mm-hmm. I'm not worthy. And all of a sudden you forget about that when it's like, okay, here's today's agenda. Here's all the top secrets of what's going on around the world. And all of a sudden you forget about that completely because you're like, oh, Jesus, this is all on me.
No, crap. I've got to make a decision here.
Oh, crap.
Or two.
Exactly. That's the right word.
And I think that's what would be, I guess, intimidating and what I would be fearful of, or at least cautious of, in the debates you're going to have, in the Oval Office. You know, imagine being seated there and you're always constantly aware of the significance of that role, the significance of that building, that office. And yet you still have to, you know, fight for it. It would likely for a couple of minutes, I would be stunned, maybe for a minute or two, and then it would be my motivator.
Yeah.
I would hope.
Yeah, I'm probably right. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara. 866-90-RED-EYE. Let's head to you. We go to Ike in North Charleston, South Carolina, about the government shutdown. Ike, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi.
Yeah, hey, guys. Man, you got me hungry. Burgers. I was a little disappointed, though, man. I didn't see any Kentucky Fried Chicken. I didn't see no tacos, and I didn't see no subs, you know?
Some fried chicken, yeah.
I got 2 points. The second one's going to be how you fix the shutdown. I can stop it in 24 hours pretty quick. First one is illegal immigration. Let's get real. Neither one of these two parties is addressing the problem, and we all know what the problem is. We don't have a problem with illegal immigration. We got a problem with illegal employers. If these people weren't making money off of them, and if these people weren't fueling this, it's just the same way as the drug trade. They use the same phrase on the drug trade. If you weren't buying the drugs wouldn't be here. So let's just quit footsieing around with it and make it for the responsibility where it lies. It's the employers. Now, you want to know how to stop the shutdown? It's real simple. If you ain't getting paid, don't go to work. I guarantee you, if the TSA boys said the hell with it and they shut down Hartsfield, LaGuardia, and Reagan, they'd find a way to stop the shutdown in about 24 hours.
Well, that's the long-term fears, that if this was to go on much longer than a month or two or however long it went on, I mean, because I think my prediction is that they'll likely do something. Well, it's not a prediction. They will do something once people start getting affected on a regular basis. So you look at the TSA employees, they don't have to stay there. If they're not getting paid, they can go on to another job.
Right.
They can go work somewhere else. And if you start seeing these huge voids created by air traffic controllers and TSA employees, that's going to hurt. And when that starts to hurt into, just imagine it went into the summer. I don't think it will. But if it went into the summer, as travel starts to pick up more and more, That's going to be a huge deal.
You have about double the amount of people calling in sick in TSA. Mm-hmm. Normally it's around a little over 3%. Right now it's about 7%, I think.
Yeah, right.
7% or something like that, which is causing a little problem, but the majority are still showing up for work at this point. But how does it last with a job that pays between really $30,000 and $50,000?
Right. Yeah. How long can they last without a paycheck?
Yep.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.